Chapter 11. The Eisenstein fell. The warp gate opened. A ragged-edged wound cut through the matrix of space, and it drew the damaged frigate inside. Unreal energies collided and annihilated one another. With a brilliant flicker of radiation, the ship left reality behind. It was impossible for a person possessed of an unaltered mind to comprehend the nature of warp space. The seething, churning ocean of raw non-matter was psychoactive. It was as much a product of the psyches of those that looked upon it as it was a shifting, willful landscape of its own. On ancient Earth, there had once been a philosopher who warned that if a man were to look into an abyss, then he should know that the abyss would also look into the man. In no other place was this as true as it was in the immaterium. The warp was a mirror for the emotions of every living thing, a sea of turbulent thought echoes, the dark dregs of every hidden desire and broken id mixed together into a raw mass of disorder. If one could apply a single word to describe the nature of the warp, that word would be chaos. The navigators and the astropaths knew the immaterium as well as any human could, but even they understood that their knowledge stood only in the shallows of this mad ocean. Description of the warp was not something they could easily relay to the limited minds of lesser beings. Some saw the realm as if it were made of taste and smell, some as a fractal backcloth woven from mathematical theorems and lines of dense equations. Others conceived it as song, with turning symphonies to represent worlds, bold strings for thought patterns, great brass reveilles for suns, and woodwinds and timpani for the ships that crossed the aurascape. But its very existence defied comprehension. The warp was change. It was the absence of reason unleashed and teeming, sometimes millpond calm, sometimes towering in titanic stormy rages. It was the Medusa, the mythic beast that could kill an unwary man who dared to look upon it unguarded. Into this the wounded starship Eisenstein had been thrown, the shimmering and unsteady bubble of her protective Geller field writhing as the insanity tried to claw inside. The blast baffles slammed shut over the bridge viewports the instant the ship began its transition. Garrow was grateful for it. The familiar lurching sensation in his chest that a warp jump forced upon him made the Death Guard grimace. There was something that disturbed him on the deepest, most primal level about the hellish light of warp space, and he was glad not to be bathed in it as the frigate translated.
"We're through," gasped Vought. "We're away."
Cruz patted her on the shoulder as a rough-throated cheer sounded from the crewmen, all except the shipmaster, who gave Garrow a grim-faced look.
"We shouldn't take our glories too soon, lads," he said, addressing his men, but facing the Death Guard. "As of now, we have only traded one set of dangers for another."
The shaking, rolling gait of the Eisenstein showed no sign of easing. If anything, the smooth voyage through normal space was a distant memory, and the rattling swell it rode through had become the norm.
"How long will it take us to reach safety?" Garrow asked.
Kariah sighed heavily, the fatigue he had been holding at bay brimming over to flood him.
"Oh, it's the warp, sir," he said, as if that would explain everything. "We could be in Terra's shade in a day, or we might find ourselves clear across the galaxy 100 years hence. There are no maps for these territories. We simply hold on and let our navigator guide us as best he can."
The ship rocked, and a moaning shudder rippled the length of the bridge chamber.
"This is a tough old boat," Kariah added grimly. "It won't go easily."
Garrow caught sight of Decius, listening intently to his helmet vox.
"Lord,"
he called, any signs of their earlier disagreement gone.
"A message from Haker below decks. He says there are intruders on board."
Nathaniel's hand went for the hilt of his sword.
"Oh, how can that be? We detected no craft launched from Typhon's ship."
I don't know, sir. I'm only relaying what the sergeant says.
Garrow toggled the Voxlink on his armor's collar and caught fragmentary barks of noise over the general channel. He heard the harsh snarls of bolter fire and screaming that clawed to inhuman heights. For an instant, he thought of the war singer and her alien chorus.
"Alarm triggers sounding on the lower tiers," reported Vought. "It's Severnaya's adjutants again, at the Navis Sanctorum."
"Haker is there," added Decius.
"Decius with me. Sendek, you will remain here," said Garrow. "Tell Haker we're coming to him, and send to all the men to be on alert."
"Aye, sir." Sendek nodded his assent. Garrow turned to the older Lunar Wolf.
"Captain Cruz, I would have you take my post here, if you will."
Iacton saluted briskly.
"This is your ship, lad. I'll do as you order me. My experience may be of some use to these youths."
Garrow made to leave and found Keela still there, standing before him.
"You will be tested," she said without preamble.
He pushed past her.
"Of that I have never been in doubt."
Andus Haker had killed many times in his life. The countless adversaries that had fallen before his guns, his blades, his fists, they were a blur of swift and purposeful death. In service to the 14th Legion, the veteran had fought Orc and Eldar, Yorgul and Hykozi. He had fought beasts and he had fought men. But the enemies that he fought today were a kind that he had never seen the like of. The first warning came when Severnaya's Navis adjutant threw herself screaming from the door of the sanctum, weeping and shouting incoherently. The woman collapsed in a heap of thin limbs and knotted cloak. Her hands jerked and pointed to the corners of the corridor, as if she could see things up there that Haker and the other Astartes were blind to. He stepped to her and felt his skin go cold, as if he had entered a refrigerated chamber. Then he saw it. Just at the edges of his vision, the merest flicker of oddly coloured light, like fireflies shimmering in the dark. It came and went so fast, for a moment he thought it might have been a trick of his brain, an after-effect of stress and battle fatigue. He was still processing this when the first of the things emerged out of the smoky air and killed the Death Guard standing with his back to him. Haker had the impression of a spinning disc, a wide purple blade trailing stinging cilia from its edges. And then the Astartes was being ripped open, blood and gore issuing out in runnels. Haker fired reflexively, aware that his battle brother was already beyond rescue, snapping off a three-round burst at the diaphanous shape. It died with a shriek, but the sound became a clarion call, and suddenly new and different forms were emerging from the walls and floor. They brought a stench of such potency with them that Haker's gorge rose and he tasted acid bile. The adjutant was already on her knees and puking violently.
"Blood's oath!"
cursed one of the men in his squad.
"Rot and death!"
It was that, and 100 times worse. The slices through which the creatures emerged allowed drafts of fetid plague-house stink to coil into the corridor. Patches of fungus and rusty discoloration fingered along crevices in the iron decking where the stench crawled forth. But this was only precursor to the diseased horrors of the invaders themselves. They sickened Haker to such a degree that he attacked instantly. So abhorrent were these things that the thought of their continued existence revolted him. The shape of the creatures was vaguely that of a man, but only in the grossest, most basic sense. Ropey limbs that shook with palsy, flicked and clawed with black, decayed talons. Distended, malformed hooves scraped across the decking, leaving lines of acid slime and excrement. Each one was naked and bloated around the torso and belly with gaseous buboes and grotesque sores that wept thick pus. Heads were shrunken balls of flaking skin over rictus grinning skulls. All of them had trains of buzzing insects following behind them, tiny bottle-green flies that dived in and out of the invaders' open wounds.
Where bolter rounds struck them, gobbets of flesh were torn off and rolled away in bloody hanks of stinking meat. They took a lot of killing, the skittering, burbling things coming at the Death Guard in hooting profusion. Haker watched them take a second brother and two more, even as he poured shot after shot into them. Then Garrow hove into view at the opposite end of the corridor, Decius and a handful of reinforcements with him. Caught between two packs of Astartes, the advance of the creatures was staggered, and the battle captain waded into the mass of them. Libertas shone as it rose and fell. Decius had liberated a flamer and torched the things with jets of promethium. Haker used the distraction to recover the adjutant and pull her out of the line of battle. She screamed and flailed at him, beating her hands on his chestplate. He could see now where her hands were bloody with self-inflicted scratch marks.
"Eyes and blood!" she wailed. "But inside the pestilence!"
Garrow stamped the last of the creatures to death and scraped the remains from his boot with a grimace.
"Silence her!" he snapped.
Decius's palm went to the breath grill of his helmet.
"In terror's name, that rancid smell!"
Haker handed off the woman to one of his men and made his report to the battle captain. Garrow listened intently.
"Word is coming in from all over the ship. The same thing. Mutant freaks materializing and leaving decay in their wake."
"It's the warp," said Decius grimly. "We all know the tales of predators that prey on ships lost or weak." He gestured at the walls. "If the Geller field fails, those things will overrun us."
"I'll trust Master Kariah's crew to keep that from happening," Garrow replied. "In the meantime, we will destroy these unclean filth wherever we find them."
"Unclean! Unclean!"
chorused the adjutant, ripping herself from the grip of Haker's trooper.
"I have seen it! Inside the eyes!"
She tore wildly at her face, ripping the skin and drawing blood.
"You see it too!"
The woman threw herself at Garrow with furious speed, and before he could deflect her, the adjutant impaled herself upon the hissing blade of his power sword. Garrow jerked back, but it was too late. The adjutant, a navigator Tertius in service to the Senioris Severnaya, pressed into him and raked bloody fingers over his torso.
"You see," she gasped, "soon the end comes. All will wither."
The end comes. Once more the words of the Yorghali child fluttered through his thoughts like a dying raptor, falling and screaming. Garrow's skin went hot with the flush of blood through his veins, his throat tightening in just the manner it had when he had taken the draught from the cups with Mortarion. He trembled, suddenly unable to speak. The woman's upturned face became paper, aged and crumbling. She slid away from him, off the tip of Libertas, turning into rags of meat and dead flesh, ash, and then nothing.
"My lord."
Haker's words were slow and thick, as if they were echoing through liquid. Garrow turned to face his trusted sergeant and recoiled. Creeping decomposition was washing over Haker and the other men, and none of them seemed to be aware of it. The resplendent marble white of their armour bled away to become discoloured by a feeble, sickly green, the shade of new death. The ceramite warped and became rippled, merging with their flesh until it strained and throbbed. Parasites and bloated organs pulsed within, and in some places wounds opened like new mouths, red-lipped with tongues of distended bowel and duct. Pus, thick and pasty, leaked from every joint and orifice, with streaks of brown rust and black ooze. Flies floated in halos around the misshapen heads of the plagued Astartes. Garrow's disgust rooted him to the spot. The malformed shapes of his warriors crowded in, words falling from their crackled, lisping maws. Upon their shoulders, Garrow saw the skull and star of the Death Guard gone, replaced with three dark discs. His attention was drawn up and away. Beyond the men, he saw a ghostly form towering above them, too tall to fit in the cramped corridor, yet there before him, beckoning with skeletal claws.
"Mortarion?"
he asked.
The twisted image of his Primarch nodded, the figure's blackened hood dipping in sluggish acknowledgement. What Garrow could see of his Primarch's armor was no longer shining with steel and brass, but discolored and corroded like old copper, wound with soiled bandages and scored with rust. The Death Lord was no more, and in his place stood a creature of pure corruption.
"Come, Nathaniel."
The voice was a whisper of wind through dead trees, a breath from a sepulchre.
"Soon we will all know the embrace of the Lord of Decay."
The end comes. The words tolled in his mind like a bell, and Garrow looked down at his hands. His gauntlets were powder. Flesh was sloughing off his fingers, bones emerging and turning into blackened twigs.
"No," he forced the denial from his throat. "This will not be."
"My lord?"
Haker tapped him on the shoulder, concern on his face.
"Are you all right?"
Garrow blinked, and saw the dead woman lying on the deck, her body still intact. He cast around. The horrific vision was gone, burst like a bubble. Decius and the others eyed him with obvious concern.
"You seem to leave us for a moment, Captain," said Haker.
He forced the turmoil of emotion from his mind.
"This is not over," Garrow insisted. "Worse is to come."
Decius tapped his helmet. "Sir, a signal from Voyen on the lower tiers. Something is happening on the gunnery decks." In the warp, it was said all things in the material realm were echoed. The emotions of men, their wishes and their bloodlusts, the yearning for change and the cycle of life from death. Logicians and thinkers throughout the Imperium meditated on the mercurial and unknowable nature of the Immaterium, desperately trying to create cages of words for something that could only be experienced, not understood. Some dared to suggest that there might be life of a sort within the warp, perhaps even intelligence after a fashion. There were even those, the ones who gathered in secret places and spoke in hushed awe, who were bold enough to venture the idea that these dark powers might possibly be superior to humanity. If these men could have known the truth, it would have broken them. In the gathering hell light that thundered around the tiny sliver of starship that was the Eisenstein, a vast and hateful intellect gave the ship the smallest portion of its attention. A gossamer touch was all that was needed, spilling the raw power of decay over the frigate's protective sphere. It reached inside through gaps in causality and found corpse flesh in abundance, pleasing in the ripe putrefaction of the diseased and dead. A diversion was presented here, the opportunity to play a little and experiment with things that might be done on larger scales at later times. Gently, as matters elsewhere drew it away, the power stroked at what it had found and granted a thin conduit to itself. The blast doors sealing in the toxic section of the gunnery deck had yet to be reopened. Issues of greater import had taken the attention of the frigate's crew as they fled from Istvan, and the clearing of the dead had become of secondary consideration. The life-eater virus was long gone. Powerful and deadly, the microbes were nevertheless short-lived, and Captain Garrow's quick actions in purging the bay's atmosphere to the void had stopped the bane from running its full course. The virus could not live without air to carry it, and so it had perished. But the destruction it had wreaked in the meantime remained. Corpses in varying states of decomposition lay scattered about the decking, men and Astartes lying where they had fallen as the germs tore through the defences of their bodies. The vacuum of space had preserved them in their grotesque tableau of death. Some frozen, with mouths open in endless screams, others little more than a slurry of jellied bones and human effluent. It was in this state that the touch found them. Riven with rotten flesh, life flensed from them, for something born within the ever-changing rebirth of the warp, it was easy to distort and remould them. With a careful placing of marks, the injection of new, more virulent glades than the human-born virus, death became fresh life, although not in a form pleasing to the eye of man. In the airless silence, fingers frozen to the decking by rimes of ice, twitched and moved, shaking off cowls of frost. The essence of decay flowed, rust and age caking the mechanisms of the blast doors, making them brittle. Those who were favoured walked once more, eschewing mortality for a transformed existence. The Eisenstein had two long promenade corridors that ran the length of the frigate's port and starboard flanks, punctuated every few metres by thin observation slits that cast blades of light down across the polished steel decking. It was in this place, on the port side, some 10 or so strides from the 97th hull frame, that Death Guard met Death Guard in open conflict. Garrow saw the misshapen things from a distance, and thought that the strange plague-bearing creatures they encountered at the Navis Sanctorum were before them once more. But he realized quickly that the size was wrong, that these diseased freaks were the match in height for the Astartes. When they hove into the light, what he saw sent him skidding to a halt, his free hand coming to his mouth in shock.
"In the Emperor's name," choked Haker. "What horror is this?"
Garrow's blood turned to ice in his veins. The awful vision that seemed to transmit itself from the dying adjutant was suddenly here before him, written in reality over the mutated, swollen parodies of Death Guard warriors. The same corpse pallor green of their battle armour, the same slack faces rippled with growths of broken tooth and horn, flesh stretched tight over bodies teeming with colonies of maggots. Voyen had joined Garrow and the others at the entrance to the corridor, and even the apothecary, hardened to sights of disease and malady, retched at the sight of the twisted man-things. The vision had been a warning, Garrow realized, a glimpse of what he encountered here, and perhaps of what a failure might engender. Around the legs of the abnormal Astartes were things that were once members of Eisenstein's crew, men caught halfway through the venomous ravages of the Life-Eater and suspended there, flesh in tatters and organs awash with ichor. They bayed and scrambled forward to attack Garrow's warriors. Decius led the firing, as the Death Guard let fly with bolters and flamers. A ragged scarecrow of skin and bone flung itself to the deck and mewed, fly-blown pustules pocking a face eaten away by leprous cancers. It spoke, the stink of its breath reaching them in a reeking wash.
"Master!"
He saw the robes, the skull sigil around its neck.
"Caleb!"
Garrow recoiled in recognition, sickened by whatever appalling power had returned his housecarl into this loathsome semblance of life. Without hesitation, Garrow turned Libertas in his hand and beheaded the creature. He fervently hoped that death a second time would be enough. Garrow hoped fleetingly that his friend could forgive him.
"Watch yourselves!" he shouted. "This is a feint!"
The tattered crewmen things were only to draw their fire from the mutant Astartes behind them. The grotesques hammered across the promenade deck towards them, snorting bilious discharges of gas and firing back with mucus-clogged guns. A shambling form advanced on metal-shod hooves among the undead brethren. It was as big as a brother in Terminator armour, and as Garrow laid eyes upon it, the thing seemed to be growing larger by the moment. Metal bent and broke as abnormal curves of discoloured bone issued out of popping boils. A distended belly of scarred, pustulant flesh protruded in an atrocious, pregnant mockery, studded with triad clusters of tumescent buboes. And atop all this, gurning from ravaged ceramite pieces that still resembled Astarte's armor, a striated neck ending in a bulbous skull. The bloodshot, rheumy eyes in the grotesque head turned and found Garrow. It winked.
"May you not find my new aspect pleasing, Nathaniel,"
bubbled a disgusting voice.
"Do I offend your delicate senses?"
"Grulgor," Garrow hissed the name like a curse. "What have you become?"
The Grulgor creature lowed and twitched as a horn, glistening wet with fluids, emerged from the middle of his brow, echoing the shape of Typhon's horned helmet.
"Better, you hidebound fool. Better. The first captain was right. The powers are soon to bloom."
He shuddered again, and flesh peeled away across his back to release tarnished tubes of budding bone. Garrow spat on the decking to clear the stink clogging his throat. The air around Grulgor and his diseased horde was thick with contagion, worse than the acrid atmosphere of the Xenos bottle ship, worse than the toxins of 100 death worlds.
"Whatever force saw fit to reanimate you, it will be in vain. I'll kill you as many times as I must."
The bloated monster beckoned with a crooked hand.
"You are welcome to make the attempt, Terran."
The battle captain waded into the fight, bolter and sword as one in arcs of death, slicing through diseased meat and matter teeming with parasites, cutting towards the monster. In the play of battle, Garrow's mind retreated to the familiar paths of war drills, of melee patterns ingrained in muscle and sinew from thousands of hours of combat. In this state, it should have been easy for him to shutter away the chilling horror these warp-spawned terrors represented, to simply fight and concentrate on that alone. The reverse was the reality, however. Garrow had seen the virus savage these men. He had heard their dying screams from the other side of the blast doors only hours earlier, and they stood before him, transformed into some living embodiment of disease, their freakish parody of life sustained by no manner that he could fathom. Was it sorcery? Could such a thing exist in the Emperor's secular cosmos? Garrow's carefully constructed world of deeply held truths and hard-edged realities was crumbling with each passing hour, as if the universe had elected to pick apart what he thought to be true and show him the lie of it. With a near physical effort, the Death Guard forced the inner turmoil into silence, dragging his mind to the single struggle of the fighting. Close by, Voyen took a glancing blow from a bolt shell that spattered thick fluid across his shoulder pauldron. The apothecary reeled to dodge a peculiar morning star of knobbed bone. The weapon found purchase instead in the throat of a junior warrior who died clawing at the cancerous wound it left behind. Garrow snarled and his bolter echoed him, a burst of fire slamming the killer back and off his feet. The battle captain cursed as the mutant Astartes shivered and then pulled itself slowly upward, leaking tainted blood and viscera. The bolter should have ended its life outright. He stormed in and took the traitor's head with his sword, finishing the job. Still the shambling, filth-encrusted monstrosities came on, the press of their bodies dividing the lines of Garrow's warriors, bunching around them as Grulgor moved to and fro, staying beyond close combat range. Perhaps he should not have been surprised to find these mutants hard to kill. Their advance mimicked the battle doctrine of the 14th Legion, the dogged and relentless progress that formed the core of the Death Guard's infantry dogma. They were matched closely, of that there was no doubt, but Garrow's men were only Astartes, and as the Emperor was his witness, he had no true understanding of what his enemies were. Garrow knew only that an abhorrence had taken root in him, and that these loathsome perversions of his brethren must be destroyed. Separated from the other Death Guard, Decius found himself besieged by a gaggle of walking dead from the ship's company, the animated corpse flesh of the frigate's crewmen pouring at him and beating on his armor with clubs made from femurs and skulls. The flamer was spent, and he was fighting hand to hand with the good weight of his chainsword as it rattled in his grip and the crackling force of his power fist. The armored gauntlet pummeled two conjoined deckhands into a seeping paste of rancid meat and bone fragments, and he took a torso apart with a downward sweep of his blade. The spinning ceramite teeth of the chainsword left a black rent in the mutant's body, and from the malodorous wound poured a waterfall of writhing maggots that pooled around Decius's boots. He turned around and cut necks with snapping reports like breaking wood. The maggot-blown deckhand staggered backward, and as Decius looked on in fascinated horror, the man-thing coiled the lips of the bloodless cut back together. Flies and shiny scarab-like insects swarmed over the wound and chewed at it, knitting the flesh with livid sutures beneath the repellent hellish warp light from the window slits. What powers propelled these foes, he wondered. Decius knew of no science that could make dead flesh animate once again, and yet here was evidence of just such an occurrence, hissing and clawing at him. The resurrected men seemed to bask in the glow from the immaterium beyond the thick armor-glass windows of the promenade. It played over their bloated, pallid flesh in chaotic patterns. On some deep level, the Death Guard marveled at the resilience and the horrific potency of these swarming plague carriers. They were living vessels for virulent disease, hosts for the simplest but most deadly of weapons. Decius paid for his moment of inattention with a typhoon of pain that ripped down the length of his power fist. Too late, he sensed the blow coming from behind him and tried to turn from it. Grulgor's towering bulk moved fast, too fast for something so corpulent and foul. The freakish warrior's battle knife carved a dull arc through the air. Like its owner, what had previously been a fine Astartes weapon was now a decayed version of its former self. The fractal-edged knife of bright lunar steel transformed into a blunted dagger of rusty metal. The attack was aimed at Decius's shoulder, poised to penetrate his armor and cut his primary heart in two. But the Astartes moved. Decius succeeded in avoiding a killing impact, but still his reflexes were not enough to save him from a slash that cut his ceramite armor wide open. He fell down, turning and yelling as he did so. Pain erupted along his nerves as his power fist malfunctioned where the knife had torn into it. His eyes widened as he saw rust and corrosion worming out across the damaged metals, a time-lapse picked of decay made real. Decius felt agony chewing at his veins and marrow, and sweat burst out all over him as his implanted organs went into overdrive to stem the tide of secondary infections. Corruption! He could already see his skin distending and blistering where the plague knife had cut him. Decius's gut churned as the invisible phages that swarmed across Grulgor's blade massed inside him. He fought back bile as the twisted Death Guard loomed over him.
No man can outlive entropy, spat Grulgor. The mark of the great destroyer claims everything.
His joints swelled and became inflamed and painful. With monumental effort, Decius swung up his chainsword and hefted it. The corpulent mutant rocked back, out of range if the young Astartes tried to slash at him with it. But instead, Decius brought it down hard across his arm, just below the elbow joint. With a scream of hate, the young Astartes severed his own limb, letting the plague-ravaged flesh and crumbling metal of his gauntlet fall away. His vision fogged, the youth's body was at its limits, fighting infection and injury, and it could not support his consciousness. Decius's eyes fluttered as his body went slack and dormant. Grulgor snorted and spat out a gobbet of acid phlegm before raising his plague knife again over Decius's unmoving body. Heavy bolt shells tore into his back and ripped away curls of dead flesh, knocking him off balance before he could deliver the killing blow. Garrow's aim was exact, and it sent the Grulgor thing stumbling, back towards the hull wall and away from Decius. Nathaniel wanted to look to the boy, to be sure that he was still alive, but his old rival was only wounded, and from what Garrow could see, these reanimated men healed as fast as he could hurt them. All around him, Voyen, Haker, and the others were caught in their own small battles. He pushed questions of the why from his mind and concentrated on the how. How can I kill him? Grulgor spun around and let loose a gargling roar, emerald-tinted blood trailing from him in a wet arc. Garrow's old foe snatched at him, the plague knife and his cancerous fingers slicing through the air and missing. Garrow fired again and heard the hollow clack as his bolter ran dry. Without missing a beat, he let the gun drop and took Libertas in a two-handed grip.
"I knew this moment would come," gurgled the mutant. "I would not be denied it. My enmity for you is beyond death."
Garrow grimaced in return.
"You have always been a braggart and a fool, Ignatius. On the field of battle you served a purpose, but now you are an abomination. You are everything the Astartes stand against, the antithesis of the Death Guard."
Grulgor spat again and made a clumsy, furious pass that Garrow parried with quick replies.
"Nathaniel, so blind. I am the harbinger of the future, you pathetic wretch."
He pounded a crooked-fingered fist on the rusted armor over his breast.
"The warp's touch is the way forward. If you are not so blinkered and mawkish, you would see it. The powers that exist out there dwarf the might of your emperor."
Grulgor pointed his knife at the throbbing crimson light beyond the starship.
"We will be deathless and eternal."
"No," said Garrow,
and took the sword to him. Libertas swung low and cut into Grulgor's fleshy fish belly white gut and tore. Nathaniel's blade met diseased meat, and, to his alarm, it sank inwards. Instead of cutting through pliant skin, the sword became enveloped in a doughy morass that drew on it like quicksand. Flickers of power from the blade sparked and died. Grulgor rumbled with amusement and puffed out his barrel chest, sucking the weapon into his body.
"There is no victory here for you," he hissed. "Only contagion and lingering agony. I'll make this ship an offering of screaming meat."
"Enough!"
Garrow could not draw the sword out. Instead, he ran it through. With all his might, the battle captain rode the blade down and carved it out across the mutant's abdomen, forcing a full charge through the crystalline matrix steel. He opened Grulgor with an angry snarl, and Libertas at last came free. Fatty ropes of serpentine intestine writhed and fell from the cut in loops across the wet decking. The former Astartes wailed and struggled to catch them in his hands, stuffing them back into the maw of his belly. Garrow rocked back, the putrid gas from inside the bloated body making his eyes stream and throat clog. The Eisenstein's deck shivered beneath his feet, and for a split second the captain's attention was taken by a rolling flash of chain lightning that surged around the flanks of the frigate. He heard Haker shouting,
"The Galler field! It's failing!"
Garrow ignored Grilgore's hooting laughter as glimmering motes of firelight began to form in the heavy air over their heads. He thought of the homunculus plague-bearers and the slashing razor-disc predators from the Navis Sanctorum. If they came to bolster Grulgor and his changed army, the tide would turn against Garrow's men. He could sense the engagement slipping away from him, the certain prediction of the battle's play hard in his thoughts, just as it had been on the Yorgal bottle world, and 100 times before. He had only moments before the fight was lost to him. Grulgor saw the expression on his face and laughed.
The mutant Astartes spread his hands to the roiling, churning hell light outside as a willing supplicant, basking in the alien energies. Outside, the membrane of artificial force that separated the frigate from the madness was disintegrating. Already weakened by the incursion of the pestilent touch that made Grulgor live and the breaches of the warp beasts, the Geller field unraveled in flares of exotic radiation, layer upon layer peeling back as if it were flesh flensed from bone. Garrow shouted into his vox, a desperate gambit coming to the fore of his thoughts.
"Cruz!" he cried. "Heed me! Get us out of the warp! Crash reversion now!"
Over the clash of the skirmish and the buzzing interference, he heard raised voices in the background, the bridge crew reacting with shock at his demands. The Lunar Wolf was wary.
"Garrow, say again."
"Drop out of the immaterium. These intruders, the warp must be sustaining them somehow. If we stay here, we'll lose the ship."
"We can't revert."
It was Vought, her words laced with panic.
"We have no idea where we are. We could emerge inside a star or..."
"Do it!"
The order was a thunderous roar.
"Captain, I..."
Cruz did not hesitate.
"Brace yourself."
"No! No! No!"
Grulgor pounded across the deck towards him, raising his blade.
"You will not deny me my satisfaction. I will see you dead, Garrow. I will outlive you."
The battle captain brought up his sword and batted Grulgor away.
"Begone, you stinking freak. Back to your hell and choke on it."
Through the armored window slits, a flurry of brilliant blue-white discharges signaled the creation of a warp gate, and the frigate dropped through the screaming maw and back into the realm of real space. Grulgor and his freakish kindred bawled a chorus of agony and frenzy and dissipated. Garrow saw it with his own eyes, and still he could not explain it. He witnessed a roaring, shimmering phantom tear itself from the meat sack of a body, drawn up and away as if it were a leaf caught in a hurricane. And for an instant, he saw the shapes of both the mutant and the man that Ignatius Grulgor had once been, before the screaming shade was torn away. It vanished through the hull of the ship with dozens of others, the captured energy of all the twisted Death Guard.
"Souls," he told himself,
his mind unable to furnish any other explanation but this most numinous, unreal of notions.
"Their souls have been taken by the warp."
Trailing fire and pieces of itself, shedding waves of radiation from the brutal emergency reversion and the collapse of the Geller bubble, the tiny frigate returned to common existence in a dark and unpopulated quadrant of interstellar space. There were no stars to sight, no worlds within range, only dust and airless void. Directionless and adrift, the Eisenstein fell.